NYC.
Before he ever picked up a camera, the internationally renowned photographer Antonín Kratochvíl led a colourful life, to say the least. After escaping from Czechoslovakia in 1967, he spent time in an Austrian refugee camp, was imprisoned in Sweden, and joined the French Foreign Legion, with whom he fought in a war before later deserting. In the second part of an interview conducted at his long-term home in New York, Antonín Kratochvíl discusses, among other things, how his own experiences have shaped his approach to photography.
Well, I understand it. You know, I mean, I go photograph refugees, or I go photograph prisons or something. I mean, it's like I've been there. You know, it's like, hey, I'm coming home. So I know the mindset, you know. So when I photograph these people, I don't really feel guilty. Like most photographers probably who came from like some safe social middle class backgrounds. I don't have that, you know, and so maybe I can look at it more with an unflinching sort of way.
Have there been times when photographs you've taken have had an impact on policy decisions by government or had any impact in terms of things changing in the world?
Well, I don't think photography can change things, but it can, from a historical point of view, it's very important because people remember history, remember the Nazi era, the concentration camps versus the Gulag. I mean, there are no pictures from Gulag, you know. And I'm sure it was horrible, just like the Nazi era, and lasted longer. So, like, photography, you know, can, from a historical point of view, can really make an imprint. But, yes, some of my pictures were used in Congress, you know, AIDS, when they were voting on how much the money they should allocate for the AIDS, fighting AIDS in Africa. Now I'm just dealing with the Red Foundation, who like to use my pictures I made of these AIDS people who, after the drugs, they get better, so they want to, you know, use that to promote their charity, you know, and drum up some money and all that. So, you know, you can help, but to change the world, no, I don't think so.
You've been in, I'm sure, countless conflict zones. You've seen things that probably 99% of people literally couldn't imagine in Rwanda and other places. Do these images keep you awake at night sometimes?
Well, you should ask my wife, because she claims that I do strange things at night, but I don't remember, so I'm fine.
And otherwise, is your personality affected in terms of, I don't know, if you hear a car backfiring, do you dive on the ground?
No. some guys are traumatized, you know. When I was in Iraq, I remember last time I was, you know, a little bit traumatized, but everybody, I'm not that traumatized, you know, I duck when there's a, you know, car backfiring.
And do you ever think, I've had enough of this, this is too hard, I've had enough, I want to just stay at home and do easier work?
Yeah, I think I always do that, you know, because after a while, you know, I change my mind and I go, but, you know, I think it's not about being there, really, it's getting there, it's the, you know, getting on a plane and getting through the hustle, you know, the security and all these other nuances, you know. That's the worst, I think, for me. That's what sort of turns me off. But other than that, and the jet lag, of course, but other than that, I love what I do.
And do you find at this stage, after so many, being in so many places, in so many difficult situations, that now you can quite quickly find your feet on the ground, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. That's the experience, what I get hired for, that when I can hit the tarmac and I can start working, because I organize myself, you know, I get the fixers, local help, and I can sort of work through the jet lag and minimize the risk of being there. So, you know, that's invaluable. You just can learn it by experience.
Journalism has changed a bit in recent decades. Most newspapers have fewer foreign pages than they used to. Has that impacted your work?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's like, it's, but I'm really staying busy, you know, it's incredible. But, you know, you shift to other areas, like NGO work, you know, you can do books, you can do these multimedia things, you know, there's always, and then internet, you know, you can also, I think internet is an amazing tool, because I heard the other day that I'm really have a big popular following in Indonesia, but I was never published there, and it's from the internet.
In the 90s, you co-founded your own agency, Seven. Why did you set up your own agency?
Well, actually, it was done in 2000. Many of us were part of little agencies were being bought by Corbis, by, you know, the Microsoft people and some other, you know, Getty. And we were sort of being, we felt like we are losing control, you know, of our product, of our voice. And so we started our own agency, which was like a first agency completely digital. You know, we were completely only on internet. You know, we sent everything down, we scanned everything, we sold everything on it. So we showed other people the possibilities, like we were the first guys really out there.
You teach as well, I believe. When you teach, what are you hoping to get across to your students? What are you hoping they get out of the experience of being taught by you?
Well, I'm trying to just change the, you know, I'm fighting the cliches, you know. I'm trying to open up new possibilities for them that, you know, they can tilt the horizon or they can have unsharp images sometimes, you know. I mean, more subjective kind of way of thinking and working. So, I mean, and it works.
I've read you described in Czech newspapers as Czecho-American, Czech-American. Do you consider yourself half American now after living here so long?
Do I look like a half a goat to you? No. I say I'm Czech all the way, man. You know, like people just put a spin on you because sometimes they do it because they want to put distance between you, them and you kind of thing. And, you know, but for me, you know, actually it really, I feel like, you know, I don't really feel like being American, you know, and I'm not really American because I also live in different places. So I could be Dutch, I could be French, I could be anything. And so I just happen to live here, but I'm Czech, and I don't really like being called Czech American.
And what is
your... I like to be called Czech living in America. That's more like it, you know.
And what is your relationship towards the Czech Republic these days, or how do you feel even when you go there?
I feel great. There are people I know the best, because I'm one of them. There's also, you know, it's also love and hate kind of thing, you know, but you work through it because people are, you know, same everywhere, you know, and it's a national thing, like a national character, if you will, then I understand that and I can deal with it. It's no problem. I love going back.
You're Czech, your wife is Czech. Would you consider the two of you moving back sometime?
Well, we are toying with the idea. I mean, you know, we already tried to do it in the 90s. But we realized that, you know, to cross that bridge is very difficult because you don't have the same point of reference with people who stayed behind. And so, but now, you know, it was back in the early 90s, I think people now in Czech Republic caught on. You know, they are kind of warped, you know, by the communism and the I mean, they can't help it. They live there. So am I, to some extent. But I managed to leave 40 years earlier than they did. Or whatever, you know. So it's difficult, but I think, you know, if you choose your friends, and I think you can live very well anyway.